Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I'll give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Chris. Chris is here to talk about his life, growing up being adopted, and now he is currently in Iceland working on his pilot training license. So I'm super excited to have Chris here to talk about whatever he wants to talk about. And thank you so much, Chris. Why don't you go ahead and say hello and introduce yourself?
Hello. Thank you for having me on here. So as I said, I'm Chris. I am now in Iceland, originally out from the U.S., born in Illinois, grew up in New Jersey, and I went to Susquehanna University, so that's how Sarah and I know each other. But my life has just taken this interesting path where I've grown up knowing that I was adopted and having that family, that history, and having identities to, you know, the ethnicity I have biologically, but then also I've grown up with my adoptive family, which is a very diverse and international family, who was not at all surprised when I moved across the ocean, because I think about half of my family members have done the same at some point in their life. But yeah, and I went to follow a dream, and I'm learning to fly out here, and it's just very interesting times with everything in the aviation industry, but also just how the state of the world is, of course, in 2020.
Yes. Now, it is the last day of 2020, so we will be putting this episode out in 2021, which will be exciting. But do you want to talk a little bit about your family? At what point did you know that you were adopted, and how did those conversations start?
Yeah, sure. So I've just always known. So I guess the first memories really are just when I'm maybe like 4 or something like that. My parents decided not to keep it a secret. There are some families and some stories that you hear. It's like, oh, I never knew I was adopted, but somehow I knew I was different from the rest of my family or something like that. Now, my parents thought it would be better if I just always knew and could come to terms with that and grow up with that. But then it also helped when I was 3 and a half. We adopted my younger brother also from birth. Like, I was adopted from birth. He was also adopted from birth. And so I do have the memories of going from New Jersey to Virginia and seeing him in the hospital and then taking him home. So, like, already knowing how adoption worked with me and then seeing it actually happen, it just, I think it made things a lot easier. But as I believe I mentioned, I was born in Illinois. My biological parents were around 23 when they had me and just weren't ready, which I completely understand. I was the same way when I was 23. No way ready for a kid. And my adoptive parents decide to look for adoption postings and such in Illinois and other states like New Jersey, but my mom grew up in Southern Illinois, so it was just convenient, and so we went out. I had grandparents out there. Yeah, just to reiterate, I always knew, and so I think that helped with growing up and building an identity. An interesting thing, though, that I noticed and reminisced a little bit about while preparing to talk to you was that for some reason in TV and just pop culture and stuff, sometimes adoption is used as a joke, or and to like maybe like make fun of someone, it's like, oh, you slightly look different from the rest of your family. You must be adopted, and like your real family probably doesn't want you. And people would just use that as a joke, and a lot of times not meaning it. Like saying it to people that they know aren't adopted. And so I ended up having a memory where my brother and I, like, someone said that to one of us, and it's just like, yeah, we are adopted. Just deadpan, and it kind of starts to shut them up. But then if someone tries to dig at us a little more, I forget if it was me or my brother, but one of us at one point said, at least my parents chose us. They're like, yours are stuck with you. It's just, if you're going to try to be nasty to us, we will come back, because we have no problem being adopted. It's who we are, and it gave us the great life that we have. Something I might circle back to while we talk is butterfly effect and how the littlest change can make the big difference. But yeah, so there's like the basis of adoption. Like, it has its struggles, as anything does. Like, so sometimes I did think, why was I put up? Why was I not good enough? And then you could get into arguments with my parents, and the thing you see sometimes on TV and movies, the like, you're not my real mom thing. Yeah, that's been said before. It happens, and you say it in the moment because you're in the heat of an argument and you're just angry. But my adoptive parents are my parents, and I usually just refer to them as such. And if referring to my biological parents, then it is biological parents or birth parents, but adoptive parents is usually just parents. But as I mentioned this to you, Sarah, before we started recording, that my adoptive family, though, we all kind of look similar enough to each other. And so people growing up have said that my brother and I look like we're actually brothers. Like, there's no way that we're adopted. And I just have to be like, it's just a weird coincidence that growing up we were both very blonde with blue eyes, and our hair both just naturally turned brown as we've gotten older, with my dad being similar and then my mom having just brown hair. It's like it all fits, and I guess similar facial structures, because we're all like genetically of similar ethnicities for the most part. A lot of just basic central Western European ethnicities.
So, you mentioned that you have similar ethnicities. What sort of background do you have that, a lot of your family has moved across seas? What was your culture like growing up?
So, me genetically is Irish, German mostly, and then a few other smatterings, like there's Austrian, Polish, Lithuanian, Swedish. I keep finding out more and more from my birth family when I talk to them. It just seems like there's always an additional ethnicity, which is something that a friend of mine had said growing up to me, that whenever he would talk to me next, I had another nationality. Because my adoptive family, that's where things get a little more interesting. My mom's side is also German and English. Like, the English part has been in the US since it was colonies, like in the Massachusetts and Maine area, while her German side came in the mid to late 1800s to like Missouri and Illinois from Germany. And we can trace all this back, but for the most part, it's my dad's side where things get interesting. My grandfather came to the United States from Palestine. He was born in Jerusalem, which at the time was Palestine, and that is where his family has been since like the 1700s. That's when we can trace the beginnings of my last name to. Just been in the Jerusalem area and living through Ottoman Empire and then the British Empire controlling it afterwards until most of the family left in 1948 with just a whole bunch of things, like the whole decolonization and then the creation of the State of Israel. But yeah, my grandfather had been in the US since 1948. My dad's mom, and I will get into later why I call her that, she is just from the Lancaster region of Pennsylvania, so Pennsylvania Dutch, like German heritage. So my dad is half Palestinian, half Pennsylvania German. But she, my dad's mom, died of cancer back in the 60s. So I never knew her and generally just knew of her through pictures and references, my dad saying my mom or just using her name Jean. So I would, that's how I grew up. It would either refer to her as Jean or your mom when talking to my dad. Who I knew as grandma, though, is my dad's stepmom, who my grandpa got married to in the 70s when he went on a business trip. He worked sales for Campbell Soup and traveled around the world, especially to the Middle East because he was a native there and could speak Arabic. But he met my grandma in Japan. And so I grew up with an Arab grandfather and a Japanese grandmother, and then just so many other nationalities growing up as well. Like the Palestinian family had Greek roots as well, and so some Greek culture got passed down even while still being in Jerusalem. But I had a great aunt who was married to my grandfather's brother, and she was from a Greek family, and like our family was usually all together for a lot of big things like Thanksgiving and such, so and Easter. So I was used to just seeing this huge smattering, and like our food would always reflect that. Like sushi is something I've known for a while, and different like Greek things. Like I grew up loving this dessert, baklava, like one of my favorite things in the world, and we have a really good recipe for an old family recipe. And then one of my aunts, who is half Japanese, half Palestinian, she married a man from New Zealand. So since like 2007, I've had this uncle by marriage who speaks with a Kiwi accent. And then back to my mom's side, my aunt, my mom's sister-in-law, came to the US from Cuba in the 60s when Castro was taking over. And then I have like other family members who are Korean or Korean descent, and just there's just a huge smattering. So I've just grown up surrounded by culture. And one thing growing up is like I didn't really understand why people could be so ignorant to like skin color and stuff like that, 'cause I grew up with this being normal. It didn't matter that I had a cousin whose skin was a lot darker than me. It's 'cause they were from a hotter place, and or like yeah, I grew up with Asian aunts and a grandmother. It just like I never really understood why people had issue. a memory that sticks out to me was in high school. I was in a sociology class. And it's weird that this happened in a sociology class where we were talking about cultures and work, like, and just the world working together and how we are kind of all the same. It's just, culturally things are a little different. But this one guy, some football player, I believe, I was sitting kind of near me. He said to one of his buddies, like, "Why do Japanese people always sound so angry when they talk?" And I just kind of turned to him and go, "My grandma's Japanese." And he has a look of embarrassment a little bit. He's like, "Oh, okay, sorry. Wait, but you don't look Japanese." My response then is, "I'm adopted." To which his buddy just like almost falls back in his seat laughing and like just yells, "Strike two!" Like, are we gonna have a third? Like, what's gonna happen? And the guy apologized. But it was funny. But yeah, it was a little weird that this was happening in a sociology class. And I don't think the teacher really noticed. But yeah, so the like having this international upbringing definitely helped kickstart a love of other cultures and wanting to travel and see the world. When I was at Susquehanna, I was a history major because I love, well, plainly I love history, but seeing how these modern countries developed and see how the culture played into everything, like that was really interesting. And I wanted to go to these places and see the places and kind of get another understanding as to why this happened. Like, if I go to like a battlefield someplace, I feel like, oh, like yeah, I can, like, this is a strategic place, like they wanted this area because it has cultural significance to one group and the other. And it's just, it was really interesting. But as I grew up with this, I did try to connect myself to my genetic roots, and so a big thing that I identified as was an Irish American and a German American. Which growing up, it was a little easier to do the German American with the fact that my dad and mom both had German roots as well, and my mom being from central southern Illinois, where pretty much everyone else was of German heritage. What she grew up with, what she ate, her traditions were, fairly German related, kind of like what we see in central Pennsylvania, but not to the extent that Illinois has its own version of the German language. Like Pennsylvania does, Illinois does not. So not exactly to the same extent, but that identity ended up going so far as between my junior and senior year of Susquehanna, I had an internship at the German American Heritage Museum in Washington, D.C., where I did like an interview that was being funded by the German government about German Americans and how you identify. And I think I had my mom do that as well. But growing up, St. Patrick's Day was always a holiday I was big on, because I loved my Irish ancestry. Like, I know the county that my family comes from, and like I know who my biological family is, and I know their last name, so I've been able to trace the last name to a county in Ireland, but before I knew them, and they then confirmed everything when I've actually talked to them. But yeah, St. Patrick's Day, it's like, yeah, I know the history, I know my culture, so I'm going to embrace this. And then same with German, it's like, oh, like yeah, like German history, like I really got into German history. It is funny, like the nature versus nurture. Sometimes nature does take over. And it's like, yeah, I want my identity with who I am genetically, but then there's also the nurture where it's like, so sometimes I will say I'm Palestinian. Like, I'm not genetically, but my last name certainly is. And that is, like, I've had stories about my grandfather growing up. And so I do have a connection to that place. I have a connection to Jerusalem. I really want to go there sometime and see my grandfather's house, which still stands mostly in the state that it was in almost 100 years ago when he was growing up there. But yeah, the cultures just, they start to mix. And but something that is interesting is I don't really say that I'm German or Irish anymore. Because like that is a very American thing. Like, if, which you probably notice as well, if you talk to someone and you say, oh, where are you from? That doesn't necessarily mean where are you from. It's like, where did your ancestors at one point live and then leave? And that's where you get, oh, I'm a German American, I'm an Irish American, Italian, blah, 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 blah. I go to these folk festivals all the time, but I've never actually been to the country and don't actually speak a lick of the language. Back when I did identify more as a German American, I did try to fight that by being a German major as well in college and speaking German and going to Germany. Like, I did my go trip, a go long to Berlin, and lived with a host family. But now, because I am in Europe, the rest of Europe does, and the rest of the world more so, like, they don't care about where your ancestors are from. And a lot of times, those that I've talked to, they say they get annoyed when Americans say, oh, I'm Irish too, but I've never been there. Oh, there was that one time I went to Glasgow, which is not in Ireland. Like, I've heard an Irish friend tell me that, where they got so annoyed that a person claiming to be Irish and said that they've been there has not actually been there. Like, anyone else out here, you're from where you're from. So an Icelander is from Iceland. It doesn't matter if their parents moved from Sweden. If they're from here, they're an Icelander. My roommate actually he's from Sweden. He's from Stockholm. His parents, though, are from Iraq. But my roommate does not say that he's Iraqi. He says that he is Swedish. Just plain and simple. And while I don't have I don't throw the Irish American, German American while I'm out here, I do think about the upbringing. And I think the Germanness has helped with some friendships with, like, the German classmate I've had. Like, me being able to understand his language and knowing his culture has definitely helped with making a friendship.
Well, and I think it also, you know, to speak to the, you know, you're American, that's how you should identify. You shouldn't be identifying as these other cultures from these other places you've never been to. At least with the stories that you've explained, you had some of that culture growing up. While you weren't living there, it was part of what your family environment was. And I think that gives it, at least in my personal opinion, I think that gives it a bit of a distinguishing factor. Like, for me to say, oh, I have Welsh background, one, I'm not 100% sure that that is definitely correct. And two, if you go back in my familial history, like, it's going to take you a while to get out of America. And therefore, it shouldn't be seen as important. And so it's interesting to hear that there are people in Europe who are like, why are you identifying as part European when you're really not, because you were born in America? But I appreciate you sharing all of that background. And it sounds like you definitely had a lot of good cultures, and it definitely helped in your upbringing, even as just you were saying, with not understanding why people might have adverse opinions to someone of a different skin color, which is definitely not something that should exist at all. And I do want to talk a little bit more about travel and your goals, but I want to go back and ask about your biological family, because you've mentioned that you are in contact with them. So I'm curious to know, like, how that happened, what that's been like, and if there's been any issues with your brother, who is also adopted. Like, does he also have contact with his family? And if you could just explain those sort of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So my parents had been in contact with my biological parents pretty much my entire life. There would be letters written maybe about once a year, and Christmas cards sent out as well. And they would also, like, send update letters and Christmas cards. They did get married. They stayed together, and I have two biological sisters that are a little bit younger, like around like 21 and 22, around that age right now. And so I found out about the sisters, I think, when I was maybe 12, like somewhere in middle school is when I found out, and my parents started showing me the Christmas cards. Like, they wanted to be sure that I was going to be, like, kind of mature enough to maybe start to process that they had two kids. Like, they had me, but then they decided not to have me, but to have these two other kids, which was never an issue for me, honestly. I mean, yeah, by the time I found out, I think I was mature enough to know the circumstances of what I would have been brought up in were a lot different than what my sisters are being brought up in. They are having a much more comfortable life than I probably would have had if my biological parents kept me. But yeah, so around 12 is when I, like, knew about the sisters, and my parents still kept contact with my biological parents, but I had not had any contact at that point. On my 18th birthday, though, that is when all of the adoption stuff became mine, because I was legally an adult, and my parents no longer really had a say on if I could talk to my biological parents or not. I think they would have let me if they thought I was ready and such, but I kind of felt like it. I didn't want them to kind of feel like I was forcing this relationship. When I did turn 18, I actually did ask my parents. I was like, "Are you okay with me reaching out and talking to my biological parents?" Which they were absolutely okay with. And my mom kind of watched me draft up the Facebook message. Like, she helped me find them on Facebook, like confirming identities with pictures, and then she watched me write up the message, and then my birthday is in April. I didn't hear back until August, just because of how Facebook kind of works, where if you're not friends with someone, the message kind of gets filtered somewhere else, and you don't necessarily get an alert for it. So I remember I lived in Aikens Hall my freshman year of Susquehanna. I remember just getting ready to go to class, but I'm just checking emails and Facebook and everything, and I see I have a message from my biological mother. And so she and I and my biological father, we all start talking to each other and get to know each other. And then after about 2 or 3 weeks, they introduced the first sister. And so she and I started to build a relationship and started to talk. And then the second sister got introduced. And we started building a relationship there as well. And, of course, it was all digital. It was all Skype and Facebook. It was really interesting. Like, it didn't feel weird to me because I had already kind of known these people and, like, knew that they existed. My sisters had both told me that it was a shock because they had no idea. And like so many other people, like even some family members didn't really know that I existed. Which in some cases that was a slow reveal. But after a few months, when we got to Christmas break in 2012, I was talking with my birth parents and with my mom, and we were arranging to go out to Illinois and not tell my sisters that I was coming, which worked out amazingly. And the good thing about where my biological family lives is that my mom, being from Illinois, still has some friends out there, and so she was able to meet up with some people. I don't remember if she saw her dad or not, like my grandpa, but she was able to like meet up with some old friends when there were moments that I kind of wanted to just be with my biological family. But it was hilarious. We arrived in the morning, my sisters were at school still, and so that was some good time for just me and my mom and my biological parents to talk, like get food together, and actually just have time together in person, because of course the girls were going to try to monopolize me as soon as they knew I was there. And so they come home from school, and my mom and I are hiding in one of my sister's rooms. I'm just like sitting on the couch she had there, and she just walks in and like just drops all her stuff, surprise Pikachu face, walks out almost crying. I can't believe that I am actually there. And so that was a really fun weekend. Created a very funny small world moment, because they already had some plans that weekend. They had friends from a lake that they all go to in the summer. They had the kids coming to stay because the adults were all going to some event. And so when they all arrived, like we're all talking, getting to know each other. They're from the town that my mom actually grew up in. And like the parents have always been from there as well. And then my mom says to the mom of these family friends, "You do kind of look familiar, like what was your maiden name and stuff like that?" And then we found out that my mom was like best friends with the older sister of this woman, who are good friends of my biological family now. It's just this weird small world connection, and it was hilarious. And then the few other times that I have met them later, because I have been with my biological family a few times and gone to this lake, and so usually the mom of this other family will just pick up and be like, "Oh yeah, like how's your mom? Like, is she still keeping up with things in the hometown?" And like back in like 2017, my grandfather, who lived in that area and was a big member of the community, he passed away, and so not too long after that, like maybe a year after, I was out at the lake, and so this woman was like, "How's your mom doing? Like, how are you doing? How's the family?" Because like, of course, like on your grandfather's old store, which is now an art center in town, like his name is plastered on it. So of course, the news of him passing like everyone knew about it, so we just wanted to make sure that you and your family were all good. It was just a very interesting small world connection, and really funny and just so sweet. But yeah, I still talk to my biological family. I try to see them when I can. I went on a big road trip with them, summer of 2013. I flew out to Illinois, and then we drove from Illinois to Ohio to the Canadian side of Niagara Falls to New York City and then back to Illinois. It was a whole big thing. And then right before I went to Germany, I went out to them. And then I saw them a little bit before I moved out to Iceland. I actually don't think I had fully decided that I was moving yet. I think it was still just an idea and that I was applying to the school that I now go to. But then back in March, right as the travel restrictions were starting to be announced and stuff, my sister was actually out here doing a spring break trip for, she was going to England because she has friends there, and I convinced her to do this program that Icelandair has where you can do a stopover here and there for up to 7 days, and there's no additional cost to your flight ticket. It just counts as like an extended layover. And so she spent a couple, the older of the biological sisters, she spent a couple days out here, and I just took her around and showed her a bunch of Icelandic things and had a lot of fun.
That sounds like you have such a good relationship with them, and that's so good to hear. So, does
Yeah,
your brother?
you mentioned my brother. So as I said earlier, he was born in Virginia. Fairfax, actually. As I mentioned to you beforehand, I have found a connection with pretty much every single one of your guests. And so a after graduation, I had a job where I was working for Volkswagen at their headquarters in the DC area in Fairfax County. So I was living in Fairfax County and working in Fairfax County. And so at that time, my brother was just starting college as well. He was just 18. And so same with me, he now had access to all the adoption stuff. It was his personally. And so he did reach out to his biological mother. His biological mother and father did not stay together. The biological mother did eventually settle down with someone else and has like half siblings with my brother. So my brother has biological half siblings. And so they started talking about maybe meeting up, and it was especially convenient because my brother mentioned to his birth mother, it's like, well, yeah, like my brother Chris now lives in Virginia. He now lives in Reston and works in Herndon. And his biological mother is like, oh, yeah, I know that area. Like, I live in, I think maybe Fairfax, like the city proper. But just like, oh, it's like, it is so close. So we did start to plan for my brother to stay with me. And like, I would kind of act in the role that my mom acted in when we went out to Illinois. So I would be there as long as he needed. And then if he wanted time away, I could just drive off and do my own thing. But it fell through, and I don't really think he's been in much contact with his biological mother since. I don't know what happened, and I've never really talked to him about it, but these things happen. Not everyone like everyone doesn't have the same story. And so the like yeah, I have a great relationship, and he doesn't, but it just they happen, and he still has plenty of time in his life, so he can make the decision. It's just it's not as convenient now as it was back in 2016, 2017 when I was actually in the same area and he could have used me as a fallback.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely okay, and I appreciate that your willingness to share a little bit of his story as well. So going back, I want to hear a little bit about travel, about flight training, about what are you doing in Iceland, and what are your goals with becoming a pilot?
All right. So my grandfather, who was from Illinois, who was like the big community person, he was a bombardier in, no, not bombardier. He was on bombers. He was a navigator in World War II on bombers. And so that history really sparked with me. Like, flying just seemed cool. And like, I was not a crying baby on an airplane. I was in love with the airplane whenever I would travel. And eighth grade took those career tests, and it told me pilot. And so I started looking into that seriously. But eventually, family and friends were like, "That's not really realistic. Like, pretty much only ex-military in the U.S. become pilots," which for the most part is true. Maybe it's like 90% of pilots in the U.S. were in the Air Force or Navy or some flying aspect. So I went to history originally as history secondary ed, decided I didn't want to do secondary ed, added the German double major because I knew that would take me to Germany for a semester, and I went to Berlin, and that is where I befriended an Icelander, and we had a really good friendship going on. And this is like I mentioned butterfly effect before. Like, this is where it all happens. Like, if I decide to stay an education emphasis for history, I would not be in Iceland right now, because I would not have gone to Berlin, and I would not have met this Icelander. I would not have gotten my job at Volkswagen, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, my Icelandic friend, became a flight attendant, and so a few times she had come out to the U.S., and we've been able to meet up, including one time when I was at Volkswagen. And when I was at Volkswagen and she visited, she was saying, "Oh, you need to come out to me now, because I've seen you in the U.S. twice. Now you need to come to me." So Memorial Day weekend of 2017, I did just that. I went out to Iceland, and I loved it. It was amazing. And I told her, yeah, if I could find a way to work out here, I totally would. And then my job at Volkswagen was a one-year internship. And so when that ended and I couldn't find something else, I was just trying to find new jobs. I was looking everywhere. I was looking in Germany. I was looking in Iceland. I was looking all over the place, any place that could take me in all sorts of fields, like museums, like anything history related, anything car related, because I had just done that. My dad actually at one point suggested maybe I look into air traffic control, because I did have that aviation interest. But my Icelandic friend messaged me. He was like, "Hey, I'm coming to New York. I have a flight. Let's meet up." And she was asking, like, "How's the job search?" "You know, it's okay. I've had some interviews. Have you looked at anything in Iceland?" "Yeah, a couple things, but I don't know how easy it would be." "Well, I remember you telling me that you wanted to be a pilot. Here's a flight school." This was May of 2018. I thought about it for basically the train ride going back to New Jersey. And was like, "I'm doing this." And I told her I'm doing this. I told my parents, "Look, I've thought this out. Okay, maybe it was just a train ride, but like, I've been looking through all of this, and I think I can do this." And it just makes a lot more sense for me to go to Europe and do this. Because my school ended up being a lot cheaper than it would be in the U.S. to go from nothing to commercial license. But also, the FAA requires 1,500 hours to fly commercially, while Europe and a lot of the rest of the world only require 200. Big difference.
So it's a very big difference.
Very big difference. Partly because of as I said, the amount of military people that the U.S. has, because, you know, we have such a huge military, like there's a huge pool that they can pull from. It's like, oh, like here's an ex-pilot, like, back to the civilian world. How about you continue to be a pilot? It's just, they can easily pull. So that, I think that's one reason why it's 1,500. I think another reason that a pilot once told me, when I got to be in the cockpit of a passenger plane once, was that there was some big incident in the 80s or something, and the FAA freaked out and decided to raise the basic requirement. Because, as I said, 1,500 for the FAA, at 1,500 in a lot of the rest of the world, that's when you can start, like, being considered as a captain. It, like, being in charge of the plane. So it's a big difference. But yeah, so May, I made that decision. I'm going to do this. And then I moved in August and started in August of 2018, just a few months of just talking to the school, like applying, be like, I'm interested. And then I had to come out here to do like some medical stuff and do like a screening at the school, like take some tests and get interviewed by a psychiatrist to see if I'm mentally fit enough to be a pilot. And yeah, so I've been out here for over 2 years now, flying. I'm almost done. I've finished all my single engine training, and I've done all the theoretical stuff. You have to take 14 exams, and you kind of have to do them twice. You have to do each subject at your school, and you have to pass there, and then you have to pass, like, the state-sponsored one, because that goes to your license. And so, passed all of those at some point this year, and then finished my single engine, and now I'm just sitting here waiting for the multi-engine stuff, because of maintenances and a little bit COVID-related, like some shutdown stuff. Not necessarily here, it's like some of the parts that we needed for the plane had to come from the factory in Austria, and Austria was a lot more locked down than Iceland was, so it was more COVID, but not here stopping us. But once it gets started, I would probably, like, I would have my license in close to a month after I can start up again, and then do some other small things, and maybe try to get into teaching. So kind of full circle, started college wanting to teach. Now I might teach how to fly as well, because that is an additional job I could do instead of waiting for an airline job, as that industry is hit pretty bad by people not being able to travel this year and a lot of people being laid off.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think about all of these layoffs in the hospitality industry, and I wonder, like, once things are better, isn't it just going to go back to booming, and how is that going to work? But it's good that you have an option for teaching, and hopefully that works out, and that you're not kind of pigeonholed into, well, I have to be a commercial pilot, and I have to wait until there's an opening, and then how many people will be applying, and all of that. So I think we're about ready to start wrapping up. Is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners?
I mean, we mentioned that we are recording this on the last day of 2020, and we mentioned COVID and such. So I do kind of want to mention how different it just has, like, this year has been for me compared to everyone else, because I'm always talking to people in the U.S. and they're talking about how, like, my parents only leave the house maybe once a week, or maybe once every 2 weeks to do groceries or and such, And like other people, like, oh yeah, super locked down, but then like in some states it's like they try to act like nothing's happening or they're just ignoring it. While me, it has been pretty free. It's like there were like assembly limits for the most part, but this summer I was out traveling, going to hot springs and mountains and such, and just and enjoying everything. Yeah, there were hard points. Like, I had my first Christmas ever not with my family, but I was basically adopted again by my friend's family, so adopted a second time, jokingly given the name Ingelson, my friend's stepdad's name, because that's how they do last names here. You are a son or daughter of your father. Think like Leif Erikson, his dad being Eric the Red. But yeah, it's just Iceland has just been vastly different from the rest of the world. Like, yeah, our population's really small, but we were trying to focus on, because our numbers would have been ridiculous per capita. Like, if only, like, if 100,000 people got COVID in Iceland, like, yeah, that doesn't sound like much for the U.S., especially with some of the U.S.'s numbers. But 100,000 people, that's one third of the country in Iceland. So it's always been a fight to contain it, and they've done a good job. I think there's only been 20 COVID-related deaths the entire year. But now it is New Year's, and some Icelandic traditions are still living on, where the search and rescue teams are doing their big fundraiser selling fireworks. So I bought some fireworks for myself last night, and I'm gonna fire those off later today.
Oh gosh, well, be safe with your fireworks.
I will.
It's definitely it's hard to hear other countries doing so well, but it's also great to hear that people are doing so well. And it's unfortunate that we're in or like me and my boyfriend are in the States and dealing with the restrictions. And like you, we did not see our family. It was both of our first Christmas away from family. So we did a lot of online stuff and it was hard. And even Thanksgiving, I have not been home for Thanksgiving before because my first job required me to work on Black Friday. And so I was like, it'll be okay. But it was his first time away from home. And you learn a lot and you figure out new things. And so it's nice to hear that you were able to have a decent year and able to still do things and that you had, while not biological or adopted family, that you had people to spend the holidays with. So before I close out everything and give all of the final words of the podcast, I always ask my guests a random question. Your question's going to be a little bit more specific because you are the first guest of 2021, even though it's still 2020. So, what are you looking forward to most in 2021?
Oh man, I'm looking forward to the slow return to somewhat normalcy, I guess the new normal. Personally, looking forward to the return of the aviation industry, and just looking forward to seeing how we will take the lessons of 2020 and COVID and move it forward and see how that goes. But then also, more literal, I'm looking forward to later on in 2021, with the summer, because here in Iceland, the sun doesn't get up much in the winter. On the shortest day of the year, the winter solstice, I was a little more north this year. The sun was up at 11:30 and down at 2:45, while in the summer it doesn't go down. So I'm kind of looking forward to having all the sun again.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. In the description, we are leaving the Instagram handles for Chris himself, but also his school's Instagram, the Iceland Aviation Academy. So they show awesome pictures from their students and flight training. So that is definitely something to check out, because even if you're not interested in flying, the pictures are beautiful. And if you'd like to connect with the podcast, all of our social media is in the description as well. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and we are also on LinkedIn, though that is not in the description, but you can follow the feed there as well. And if you'd like to support the podcast, we are on Patreon. And if you're interested in guest hosting, you can always send me an email. That's actually how Chris got on the show today, so I'm super appreciative of that. And thank you so much to Chris for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next time, bye!
Thank you, everyone. Everything will work out, as the Icelanders say, Þetta rættast. Sjáumst!